Welcome to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, regional, and national environmental issues. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I will be one of your hosts for today's show. Joining me here in the studio are my Earth Matters co-hosts, Allison Civic and Donna Stevens. Allison is the Executive Director of the Gila Resources Information Project, or GRIP, and also the Gila Conservation Coalition. And Donna is the Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. Today's show is a bit of an unorthodox show since all three hosts are here taking turns asking and answering questions. In the last segment of this show, we're going to be welcoming Kevin Bixby from the Southwest Environmental Center, and our new Earth Matters co-producer will be joining us by the phone. We'd like to spend the next hour reviewing some Gila and Southwest New Mexico environmental issues of 2017 and also talk about the year ahead. Welcome to Earth Matters, Donna and Allison.
Thank you, Nathan. Good to be here with you.
Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, guys.
Can't believe a year has gone by already.
Already. Donna, I'd like to start the program today by asking you about some of UGWA's, up the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance's successes in 2017. So can you share with us some stories about that?
Sure. I'd like to start with something positive here. This is an educational event that the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance has done for the last couple of years. And this is the Children's Water Festival. So this year, we expanded the Children's Water Festival to include not just Silver City School District's fifth graders, but also fifth graders from Deming, from Lordsburg, and from the Cobray School District. So three different days, we took all these fifth graders out to the Gila River. Some of them had never been there before. And so, in a way, I feel like it's really important to get kids involved in conservation issues while they're young, before they have all these preconceived notions. And, you know, they're way into it, of course, at this age, too. So
right.
So that was something that we feel was very successful. I have to give a shout-out here to my coworker, Carol Fugali, who organized all of it and did an enormous amount of work getting kids out there to the river. And also, it sort of rekindled her passion for doing conservation education with kids. So that was cool, too. And another thing that I think was very successful, we finished up two long-term grants this fall. One of them at the end of the year, actually, December 31st. The first one is a four-year grant where we cleaned up a bunch of junk that had washed into the river from the September 2013 flood, a huge historic flood. And it washed in like little outbuildings and cabins and all kinds of junk, like refrigerators.
Canoes wrapped around trees.
Yes, crazy stuff. And, you know, it was all in the wilderness. Almost all of
right.
It was in the wilderness area, which means you can't drive in, which means you're accessing it with horses and mules or with rafts, you know, rafting down the river. So it was a little bit tricky scheduling it because we had to wait till the river levels were safe to cross or safe to raft. And so we have all these great photos of, like, a refrigerator on the back of a mule, you know, like counterbalanced by rocks on the other side. And all that stuff got packed out of the wilderness. And then once there was also a raft trip where they towed an extra raft and just floated out an unbelievable amount of junk, like thousands of pounds of garbage.
Wow.
Floated out of the wilderness area. So that was a really good grant. I was really proud of the work we did there. I also want to thank all the many people, mostly from Gila Hot Springs, who actually did the work, because it wasn't me. And another thing we did this year that I think was very successful, again, this was on the Gila River in the Gila Wilderness area, was tamarisk removal. So again, there were crews, again, mostly from Gila Hot Springs, but some also from Silver City. And people went out there all summer long. We've been doing it, so 2016 and 2017, removing tamarisks, an invasive tree, also called salt cedar, along the Gila River. So I think those are a few really successful things that we did.
And can I just ask you a follow-up question on the tamarisk? Because
sure.
we floated the Gila River in February and March of this year.
Okay.
When we had all that snow melt, and we saw all the work that folks have done removing that tamarisk. Has there been any sort of like trips back down into the wilderness during the summer or the fall of this year to see if it's coming back or how successful has it been?
Yes, definitely. So we started the project in summer of 2016, and then in summer of 2017, we went back. You know, so we had GPS readings of where all of those tamarisks were removed, and there were almost 9,000 stems that were cut. I mean, that doesn't mean 9,000 trees, because one individual could have many stems coming from the ground, but loads and loads of tamarisk were cut. And then in this year, 2017, we went back and revisited all those places where we had cut them in 2016. And we had a really good success rate. So we did cut some more this year, but mostly they were gone. But, I mean, they hang on.
Right.
They're pretty tenacious. So, yes, we went back and retreated it. And we're picturing that we will do this again in 2018.
And, Donna, remind people why tamarisk is bad.
Okay, tamarisk is bad because it's an invasive species. It comes from Eurasia, and it doesn't really belong here. And most animals, well, no animals in the Gila evolved with it or are very adapted to it, although there are a couple of exceptions, like Southwest Willow Flycatcher. But mostly it uses a lot of water, and it's called salt cedar because when its leaves drop to the ground, they deposit salt into the soil, and then it makes it difficult for other plants to get established in that area. So it just doesn't belong here, and it really takes over. And you can see, like, if you go to areas in Arizona along the Gila River, it's just loaded with tamarisk. You don't see the native willows and cottonwoods anymore because tamarisk can outcompete those natives if you don't have the natural flood regime that we fortunately still have here in the Gila. So, Nathan, I want to turn the tables and ask you, what were some of your successes in 2017?
Honestly, I have to say that our wilderness inventory and wild and scenic inventories that we've been working on for the last 4.5 years, we've completed that work this year. And it's been really fun sitting at home printing out the entire proposal that we've worked on for the last 4.5 years. And it's over 600 pages of information about areas that qualify for potential new wilderness designation and wild and scenic river designation. So that's, I can say it's a success story for 2017, but in reality, it's just a culmination of over 4.5 years of work. And it's just now sort of we're in that time of the forest planning process where we're going to be submitting all this information. So that's a huge success for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance in 2017 for sure.
Good work.
And Allison, can you tell us some of the mining issues that the Gila Resources Information Project tackled this year? I understand that Freeport-McMoRan is bringing the Cobre mine back online right now. Can you give us an update on GRIP's activities related to water quality protection at the mines?
Sure. Well, as most people know, the Cobre mine has officially come off of standby status, meaning it's been out of operation since 1998, and Freeport-McMoRan had a proposal to bring it back online, and that was approved recently by the Mining and Minerals Division. And folks traveling on Highway 152 between the mining district and the Mimbres have probably noticed the construction of the Cobre-Chino haul road. That's going to be used by the big haul trucks. There will be a bridge going over Highway 152 to bring ore from the Continental Pit and Hanover Mountain. They're going to be mining Hanover Mountain down to the ground and taking all that ore over to Chino for processing. So what's still happening and still kind of in play here are the discharge permits and the closure closeout plan are still being reviewed by the agencies. So these, of course, are really important to make sure that groundwater and surface water are protected not only during operation of the mine, but also at closure closeout when the mine needs to get reclaimed and cleaned up to make sure that over the long term our water resources as well as our air quality and wildlife are protected. So there are also new waste rock stockpiles going in at Chino. We're very concerned about erosion, surface groundwater quality. We have had climate change. We are seeing climate change here in our area with the increase in severe precipitation events. So we had, most people remember, in October, we had that severe flood here in Silver City. Well, in November of 2016, we also had a 500-year precipitation event in the mining district. So these amazingly huge precipitation events wreak havoc on waste rock stockpiles, stormwater infrastructure. And so what we're very concerned about is that the mines are planning and designing these units for the 100-year storm event as opposed to a more severe storm event. So best management practices these days take into consideration climate change. So the mining industry is planning for the 200-year storm event or greater. We want to see that at our mines because we're already seeing these severe storm events and we're already seeing severe erosion. And then one thing that will be coming up in 2018 is the Chino closure closeout plan is supposed to be available in January. It keeps getting delayed. The permit, or I should say permits, both the Mining and Minerals Division permit and the discharge permit through the Environment Department, are now nearly 14, well, they're 14, pushing 15 years old. This is very disconcerting to us. We have been pushing very hard on our state agencies to move ahead and require that these closure closeout plans be updated and that the permits get updated. We need more financial assurance. We need to incorporate so many of the changes that have happened at the mines over the last 14, 15 years. So that's a huge task for us in 2018.
What can the public do to try and ensure that we get these, that you're talking about the stormwater thresholds, the 200, 500 year sort of events? How can we ensure that we can get that in place? Because that is a big deal.
It is a big deal. And I think that, you know, we've been making those comments and public comments. Other people, you know, the public at large has been making those comments. I think the response, unfortunately, that we get is, oh, well, the law, the state law says 100 years. Well, the Environment Department and Mining and Minerals Division do have discretion, and especially if they think that groundwater or surface water won't be protected, they do have discretion to require that additional, you know, they just put additional conditions on the permit to do more. So we feel that more could be done, but ultimately, you know, it will take, you know, a change to the regulations to require that planning for, say, the 200-year event or 500-year precipation event become law, so to speak.
So that kind of falls into the next question. What has GRIP and your partners been doing in the New Mexico Mining Act have been defending the state's Water Quality Act from the Martinez administration's attempts to limit public participation and roll back water quality? Can you give us an update on that?
Right. Well, as many people recall, the state passed the copper rule back in 2013, and this really gives copper mines in the state the ability to not comply with groundwater quality standards. And one of the things that we were afraid of back then was that other types of polluters, polluters and other industries would say, hey, well, if copper mines are getting a pass on meeting water quality regulations or standards, well, we want the same.
Right.
So that's essentially what has happened with this latest petition from the New Mexico Environment Department to the Water Quality Control Commission. They were trying to get discharge permit amendments, which would basically allow the agency or a polluter to say, I want to amend my permit for XYZ, and then the agency could amend the permit without public participation, basically approve it and then let the public know, and then the public has 30 days to appeal that. Well, we fought that. We compiled a list of over 100 discharge permit amendments that had happened over the last 20 years. And right before the hearing happened in November, the Environment Department dropped their petition. So we won on that discharge permit amendment, but they're still trying to give sort of variances for the lifetime of facility, so a variance from the Water Quality Act for facilities. So it goes on, and we're continuing to fight that.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU. We'll be right back after a short break to talk more about 2017 and 2018. Please stay tuned.
Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Donna Stevens, the Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and I'm one of your hosts for today's show. My guests today are my fellow Earth Matters co-hosts, Nathan Newcomer and Allison Civic. And in the last part of the show, Kevin Bixby of the Southwest Environmental Center in Las Cruces and our new Earth Matters co-producer will be joining us by phone. For today's show, we're reviewing some of the issues of 2017 and also looking ahead to the next year, which is almost upon us. So I wanted to ask you, Nathan, what are you most proud of this year? What was your biggest accomplishment that you felt the best about?
Well, you know, it's hard to pick, but I think that the response from the community around the military overflights was really pleasing to see that. Going from receiving an email from a lady in Truth or Consequences who had this rambling email about military overflights in the Gila, mentioning my name to a news reporter and me going like, what is this? Like, is this really a thing? Like,
right.
And then phoning up the Gila National Forest saying, yes, this is really happening or this is a real proposal, to then contacting my county commissioner, Harry Brown, and then reaching out to other elected officials and nobody being aware of this, and just seeing the whole community come together and say, why were we not consulted on this? Like, that was a big oversight by the military. And I think rightfully so, the community was outraged by it. And so I think it was really, really great to see, to be able to be an organizer and work within Grant County and with all of our partners to get everybody to come together and show our opposition to this and say, we at least need to have our voices heard. We were successful in getting a county commission meeting with Holloman. I can't say they gave us much information at that meeting, but I think we sent a pretty clear message to them that we do not want to see 10,000 sortie military planes flying over our community and over our beloved wilderness areas. So I think that that would be probably my most proudest moment of the year for sure.
Yeah, that was good work. And we're going to be talking about that in this part of the show, too. How about you, Allison? What was your proudest achievement this year?
Well, I would say our 13th annual Gila River Festival was the most ambitious river festival yet. It was huge. We had nearly 3,000 people participate and great speakers, and we really ratcheted up, I think, the level of the River Festival. And I guess one other thing I want to mention is that we have survived a tremendous year of onslaught, barrage of threats and rollbacks to our public lands, our environment, our quality of life, and it's just been ongoing. Unbelievable what has happened since
unprecedented
since the Trump administration took over, and I have to say the Martinez administration too, keeping up the pressure. So I'm proud that we're all still standing here at the end of 2017 and that we've been able to fight back, and that all of our community members really have engaged, gotten involved, and really pushed back on and, you know, made it clear that our environment, our public lands, our quality of life are important to us.
Yeah, I mean, I was joking before we started the show here this morning that just surviving was my proudest moment. But I mean, I said it as a joke, but really there's a lot of truth to that. I know people are feeling like this has been an extremely difficult year on many levels. And yes, if we're still standing, then I think we're doing good. And we need to remember that even just holding the line, not things getting worse, is an achievement in times like this. So,
and Donna, what about you? What's your proudest moment?
Oh, gosh, my proudest moment, surviving.
Okay.
I talked about some of the successes that UGWA had, Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, earlier in the show, and I guess those are my proudest moments. And also the Gila River Festival was a big deal. So we started talking a minute ago, Nathan, you were mentioning how one of your big achievements for the year was getting the community together, nonprofits and residents alike, on the Holloman Air Force Base's proposal to do military overflights over southwest New Mexico and the Gila National Forest. I'm wondering, Allison, if you can tell us a little bit about this.
Sure. I'll just give folks an update. As many people recall, back on November 14th, Holloman Air Force Base and others from the Air Force were invited by our Grant County commissioners to a special meeting to update people on their proposal to expand their special use airspace. And one of the alternatives, alternative two, is to create a new military operations area over the Silver City Gila region. And so we heard a little bit more about that at the meeting, although, as Nathan said, we didn't really get much information. A number of groups, I don't know, 20 plus groups,
easily
put together scoping comments. So these are comments, these are issues that we want the Air Force to take into consideration when they're doing their environmental impact statement and analyzing all of these alternatives. We want them to be analyzing more alternatives. I mean, that's one big, huge thing, that they haven't even analyzed all the potential alternatives that are available to them, like using your existing military operations areas. So that wasn't really analyzed. So we've submitted those scoping comments, pretty extensive. We also had well over 2,300 comments that we collected and provided to the Air Force. And I would say overwhelmingly people from our area, as well as other people around the country for which the Gila is very important, are universally opposed to this proposal. And so what is happening now is the Air Force is putting together their draft EIS. They told us that
an EIS being
an environmental impact statement. So this is under the National Environmental Policy Act. And they told us it'll be ready in 6 months or so. So, you know, sometime in the spring at the earliest, it could be available. They will have to have public review and comment and public meetings. We told them in no uncertain terms, we expect them to be back in Silver City to have public meetings on the draft EIS. And the other thing is, we here in our community, all of us conservation, environmental groups and others with expertise in our community, we're just working very, very hard to collect data, collect studies, to be putting together for comments on the draft EIS.
Right. So I just want to let our listeners know that even though there is no meeting happening right now, that people are still really working on this. We haven't just dropped it after that November 14th meeting.
And I should mention, too, that we will be having a public forum in January, January 11th, at the Global Resource Center at 6:30. And our guest for that meeting will be Carol Miller, who's executive director of Peaceful Skies Coalition. She's based in Taos, and she's going to be coming down here to talk to us about all of these similar military expansion ideas or proposals, I should say, that are going on around the country. And she's been meeting with folks in Vermont. There's also a huge expansion by the Navy in the Seattle area over the Olympic Peninsula, also Cannon Air Force Base over the northern part of New Mexico and Colorado. So she'll be here with us for a public forum talking to us about that issue, and we'll have other speakers as well. It'll be a panel discussion. So we invite everybody to come January 11th, 6:30, Global Resource Center.
Okay. Thank you for that. So I wanted to ask you, Nathan, you work for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. You talked about this a little bit. What was your group's involvement in the military flyovers? What did you guys do, and what are you still doing?
Well, again, being the first person to be notified about it, it sort of fell into my lap. So I kind of took it upon myself to be the messenger of bad news for the community. It just helped to organize folks, get them on board with our opposition to this. Right now, what we're doing is we're focusing on building a website for the public to have all the resources that everyone's working, as Allison said, that we're all still currently working on pulling together studies and information. So we want to be able to have all that information readily available for the public to digest, to consume, and to understand what we're potentially facing here. The other element of the website is going to be a way for the public to submit comments on current military activities that are happening, because as many people know, there's already military activities occurring in the Gila National Forest. We don't understand the scope of it. We don't even really know what the boundaries are of where they're supposed to be actually doing their overflights. But there's many people in Gila Hot Springs that are getting buzzed by jets at 500 feet above ground level, which just doesn't seem like that's legal. So we're going to be pulling together sort of a take action element to the website for people to submit comments about current military operations so that we can actually figure out what the heck is going on around here, because it's really unclear as to the scope of what's currently supposed to be allowed by the FAA for military practices in the airspace above the Gila and what's going to be proposed. So that's the most important thing that we're working on right now in regards to the military operations.
Okay. And that website, it's not up yet.
It's not up yet. No. In fact, I'm going to be meeting with Patrice Muchnick after our show today to go over some more of that information so we can start to get that website up and running, hopefully by next month in January 2018.
Okay. And then we'll be letting people know how they can access what the website is and how they can make comments if they're already experiencing jet flyovers that are scary.
The other thing I'll say is that the Gila National Forest has said that it's difficult for them to sort of take a stance on this because you're talking about airspace and they don't manage airspace. The FAA manages airspace. The Gila National Forest manages the ground under that airspace.
Right.
But we haven't heard is that how will they address the dropping of chaff cartridges and flares that's coming from airspace and going to land on the ground that's managed by the Gila National Forest. Now, that's something that I will be really interested in seeing how Holloman addresses it in their draft environmental impact statement, because if they're dropping 30,000 cartridges over the Gila National Forest and over the first wilderness area in the United States, how does that like factor into the management from the land management perspective, from the Gila National Forest Service perspective?
In this minute that we have before the break, could you briefly explain what the chaff and flares are?
The chaff cartridges are aluminum cartridges that are filled with, like, fibers.
Glass or plastic.
Glass or plastic fibers. We don't know which one it's going to be yet. The flares, they say, well, they're just going to burn up in the atmosphere. But we know from other examples, like in Oregon, there was a fire that was started by a flare. So yeah, there's just very little information that's available as to the specifics of what Holloman is proposing over the Gila National Forest. But from the other areas that we've been talking with our partners up in the Pacific Northwest, it doesn't look like it's a good thing. I mean, it could be really, really bad for us.
And I think we'll probably find out more about that when the draft environmental impact statement comes out in the spring. But for now, we need to take a break. So we're reviewing some of the events from 2017 and looking ahead to 2018. So please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, the director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and I'm one of the three, and now four, co-hosts for Earth Matters. My guests today in the studio are my fellow hosts, Nathan Newcomer and Allison Civic, and Kevin Bixby of the Southwestern Environmental Center will be joining us in a few minutes. We are reviewing some local conservation issues from this year, 2017, and looking ahead to next year. Allison, I wanted to turn now to an issue we've been talking about on this show here for years, because it's been going on for years, and it still hasn't been decided. I'm talking, of course, about the potential Gila River diversion, and I understand that the deadline for a record of decision is about 2 years away. Can you give us an update about where we are?
Sure, that's right. So under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, the New Mexico CAP entity, which is the local group charged with planning for a Gila River diversion, they have a deadline of the end of 2019 to have a record of decision under the National Environmental Policy Act. And they just now are getting their revised proposed action to the Federal Bureau of Reclamation to kick off that environmental compliance phase. So they approved at the last New Mexico CAP entity meeting a proposed action. I believe the letter is going out at the end of this week, we heard. But they are talking about a diversion somewhere around the Upper Gila diversion ditch on the Gila River in the Cliff Gila Valley with on-farm storage and as well as Wind Canyon off-farm storage, some storage facilities down in Verdon, which is downstream on the Gila River, and then a diversion and conveyance over on the San Francisco River. At the same time, the CAP entity is saying that they want to develop all 14,000 acre feet of Gila River water. We know that doing that will cost, you know, $1 billion or more. So although right now the project is scaled back and it costs, they're talking about costs for this phase one of lowball estimate of somewhere around $43.5 million. They're still talking about this full build out, which we know is hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't have all the costs, so it's hard for us to know right now what the full cost is going to be. But in our estimation, we believe that it's well beyond the amount of federal subsidy that's available under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. So where are we right now? Well, the NEPA process, National Environmental Policy Act process, is going to kick off sometime, probably in the spring. We're hearing March of 2018. So there'll be a notice of intent, there'll be scoping meetings, the public needs to attend those meetings, there'll be a draft environmental impact statement a year after that, and all of this is being crammed into a very short amount of time. The Trump administration has actually passed an executive order to streamline the NEPA environmental compliance process on federal projects, and so they're now saying you have to complete the NEPA process within a year. So we'll see if that happens in this case.
There's no way, realistically, that they can do an entire environmental impact statement in 1 year. I mean, that's just...
Well, as you can imagine, probably, likely, a lot of corners will be cut.
Yeah.
And it will be a very, probably, superficial analysis.
And I think that's kind of the point.
Right, right.
So I wanted to ask you another question about something that's been going on with that issue, Allison. So recently, the legislature, a couple times in fall of 2017, has put pressure on the CAP entity about its expenditures of the New Mexico Unit funds. I wonder if you could tell us first, what is the New Mexico Unit, and what is the concern of the New Mexico legislature?
Right. So the New Mexico Unit is the technical term for the Gila River diversion. So because technically, the Gila River diversion is the New Mexico Unit of the Central Arizona Project. So that's why it's referred to as the New Mexico Unit. So the New Mexico Unit must develop Gila River water. It must trigger an exchange with the Central Arizona Project. So that's how this works. That's how New Mexico would get additional federal subsidy under the Arizona Water Settlements Act if they actually construct a New Mexico unit. So the New Mexico Unit Fund actually was a fund that was set up by the legislature back in, I believe, 2010. The bill was passed. And this is the fund within the state treasury that accepts the dollars from the Bureau of Reclamation for funding this project. Now, remember, there are three different pots of money. The first pot of money was the $66 million that New Mexico gets to develop projects that meet a water supply demand in southwestern New Mexico. So those chunks of money have been coming in $9.1 million increments since 2012. So there's $50 million plus dollars in the New Mexico Unit Fund. And I think what the legislature is very concerned about is the fact that their perception is that the New Mexico CAP entity is hoarding this money. Now, remember, this money can be spent on any water project in southwestern New Mexico. And so the legislature is questioning, Why isn't this money being spent on other community water projects in southwestern New Mexico? We still have the Grant County Regional Water Supply Project that is in need of $10, $11 million to be fully funded for all four phases, but yet they're being forced to go to other pots of money. The city of Deming and Columbus right now, the village of Columbus, they have two projects before the Water Trust Board totaling $1.3 million. Those projects could use money from the New Mexico Unit Fund, but yet they're going to the Water Trust Board and competing for dollars from other areas of the state. And so that is the legislature's concern, is that the CAP entity is kind of hoarding, all sitting on this huge pile of money that could be spent on these critical, very important, high-priority local water projects and taking away from other areas of the state.
Allison, I wanted to ask you if you can give us a sense of what's on the agenda in 2018 for the Gila River diversion. You've talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, I have. But one thing I do want to say is when the CAP entity gets back to their next meeting in 2018, January 2nd, they are going to be contemplating amending their joint powers agreement to actually spend some of that New Mexico Unit Fund money on non-diversion projects, so some of these community water projects. They're feeling the pressure from the legislature. They're hearing through someone in the legislature that if they don't start spending some of that money on good projects, that the legislature is going to take their money away. And they're very concerned about that, because the only way the CAP entity can move forward is if they continue to get a budget every year to work on the New Mexico unit.
And their joint powers agreement right now, what is it set up to do?
So it's all geared towards developing the New Mexico unit or the Gila River diversion. So All the money has to be spent on planning for or implementing a diversion.
Okay. So that's our update on the Gila River diversion. We've been talking about that for a long time, and it still won't be decided until the end of, well, sometime in 2019.
2019, that's right.
Presumably.
So, Nathan, I want to bring you back into the discussion here. Okay. You talked earlier in the show about wilderness inventories that you did for the Gila National Forest plan revision process. I'm wondering if you can tell us how your inventories fit into forest planning and what forest planning is and why it's important.
Sure. So the Gila National Forest is undertaking a forest-wide forest plan revision. The last time they did this was in 1986, so it's a 30-year-old document. A lot has changed in 30 years. We've been talking a little bit about climate change. That wasn't addressed in the 1986 document. Habitat resiliency, carbon sequestration, all that kind of good stuff was not addressed in the 1986 document. So the forest plan revision covers every single resource that the forest manages, whether that be wilderness, wild and scenic rivers, fisheries, habitat for endangered species, grazing, minerals, mining, logging, cultural resources, socioeconomic aspects. It covers every single aspect of the national forest. And so the wilderness inventories that we've been doing are a part of the forest plan revision. The Forest Service is required by law to do a wilderness inventory and wild and scenic eligibility study. And so we essentially gathered that data for them. I mean, we're biased because we're the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. We want to see as much wilderness protected in the state as possible. But yeah, we're going to be submitting all that data to them sometime in early January. It's about 600,000 acres that we're going to be proposing for wilderness and over 450 river miles for wild and scenic on the Gila River and the San Francisco River and their tributaries. So it's going to be 2018 is going to be really interesting here. We've got the Holloman Air Force Base draft environmental impact statement. We've got NEPA analysis going on for the Gila River diversion stuff. We've got the Gila Forest Plan that's going to be coming out with their draft environmental impact statement. It's going to be a busy year next year.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have a problem coming up with shows to do next year.
It'll be good to have Kevin on so he can help out.
It will be good to have Kevin. Yeah, and Kevin will be joining us in just a few minutes to talk about some of the issues going on in his part of the state in Las Cruces. I just wanted to talk a little bit more about forest planning just for a couple minutes. Nathan, you've given us a really good background, and I want to say that the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, who I work with, has been coordinating all of these groups. So there's your group, there's mine, there's all kinds of groups, you know, local, regional, and national, that are all working together on forest planning because it's a lot. And we all the different organizations kind of have different strengths. So we kind of plug in where it makes sense for us to do that. And I've been attending this whole series of meetings that the Gila National Forest has been putting on. So those have been, they've been very interesting. And I mean, you have to do that if you want to be involved in this process.
Before we take a break, Donna, I wanted to ask you about the Gila River Festival. We had a tremendous 13th annual Gila River Festival. What do you have planned for the 14th annual in 2018?
Good question. So first, the dates are September 20th through 23rd, and that's 2018. And our theme is the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. So that is a big deal, and Nathan touched on that briefly. We have invited Senator Tom Udall to be our keynote speaker, and he has accepted. I mean, there's always a little bit of concern that if something, some big vote comes up in Washington, he won't be able to make it, but other than that, he has said that he will be our keynote speaker to talk about wild and scenic rivers. And then, of course, we'll be doing the other things that we do. We'll have other speakers talking about rivers. We'll have field trips. We're just at the beginning stages of planning for it now, but we'll probably have some kind of street fair or street party like we've done before, and arts-related activities and all kinds of good stuff. So stay tuned for that. So now, I would like to for us to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be looking ahead to 2018. We'll be talking a little bit about 2017, and we'll be inviting in our new Earth Matters co-host, Kevin Bixby. Please stay tuned.
Welcome back to Earth Matters, here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of the Gila Resources Information Project and the Gila Conservation Coalition, and I'm one of your hosts for today's program. With me in the studio today are my Earth Matters co-hosts, Nathan Newcomer and Donna Stevens, and we've been reviewing a few of the many local conservation issues of 2017 and looking ahead to 2018. And now joining us by phone, we'd like to introduce our new co-producer and co-host of Earth Matters, Kevin Bixby of the Southwest Environmental Center in Las Cruces. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be on the show and joining you guys as a co-host.
Well, we're so glad to have you today. And just a little background, since the new Las Cruces community radio station KTAL went live this past summer, we've been talking to Kevin, one of KTAL's founders, about collaboration between our two stations. So we are really excited to kick off in early 2018 a new partnership between Gila Members Community Radio and Las Cruces Community Radio through a joint production of Earth Matters. So this will expand the listening area for Earth Matters to southern New Mexico, bring on board Kevin Bixby to our team of co-producers of the program, and broaden the range of topics we'll bring our listeners every week. So we're really looking forward to your participation, Kevin, in Earth Matters. And Kevin, your first show is going to be on Tuesday, January 2nd. Is that right?
That's the plan.
All right. Well, why don't you give us a sense of what you'll be bringing to our Earth Matters listeners through your programming?
Okay. Well, I think you guys are already covering so many important issues that affect southern New Mexico, particularly the Gila region. The Southwest Environmental Center is the organization that I direct, and we work on some of the same issues, but we also work on some other issues. So I will talk about some of the issues that we are working on that are most likely of concern to our listeners as well as yours. I also want to bring a big picture perspective as much as I can to our local and regional issues, because I think it's always important for people to place, you know, issues like the Gila River diversion or the border wall in the context of what's happening worldwide. So I'd like to, in addition to updating our listeners about those sorts of regional issues, also bring in those big picture perspectives with interviews with folks like, you know, Naomi Klein and E.O. Wilson, if they'll consent to an interview. Yeah. That's the sort of focus I want to bring. And my focus will be primarily on wildlife because we are a wildlife advocacy organization.
That sounds really good, Kevin. This is Donna, your co-host now.
Hi, Donna.
I want to welcome you to being our newest co-host here on Earth Matters. And I want to ask you about some of the important issues that Southwestern Environmental Center worked on in 2017. I know we had you and Johanna Bencomo on the show a few months ago talking about border issues. So can you talk about that a little bit and also some of the other issues that you worked on in this last year?
Sure. In chronological order, at the beginning of the year, we were really geared up for the legislative session in Santa Fe. SWEC and our coalition partners were focused on getting a number of bills passed that dealt with wildlife policy. And a lot of people don't know this, but New Mexico state law, well, first of all, states rather than the federal government have primary jurisdiction over protecting and regulating the use of wildlife within their boundaries. But many states, including New Mexico, do not actually have, in law, they do not provide legal protection for all of their wildlife. And that's certainly the case with New Mexico. So we had a bill to expand protection to all of our state's wildlife. It was the first time that bill had been introduced, and it didn't go very far, but it's going to come back. And we also had a bill to reform or change the way our state game commission is selected, because right now it's very much a political appointed body. The governor appoints seven people who serve at his or her will and can be fired without any reason. So it becomes a very political body. We want to change that. That bill didn't go very far either, but it went farther than it did last time, and we'll see that one again. And I think what gave us the greatest hope was our bill to end coyote killing contest in New Mexico. And this was the third time this bill had been introduced, and this time it got further than it had ever gone before. It made it to made it through the Senate and almost came up for a House floor vote. We're pretty confident that that bill will pass in 2019. So this package of wildlife reform bills that advanced, that kept us pretty busy. And then things sort of shifted, sort of caught up in the theme or the mood of the country for working across interest areas and intersectionally. We really started to focus on the border wall. You know, this is for a wildlife advocacy group, you have to be focused on the border wall because it's so bad for wildlife, such as endangered Mexican gray wolves and jaguars and ocelots and hundreds of species that are found in the border region. But this time around, as opposed to 10 years ago when we first started fighting it, we reached out to work with some non-traditional allies, the ACLU and New Mexico CAFE. And as you mentioned, Johanna from CAFE and I came up and were on your show earlier. And that's been really exciting. I think it's a very powerful coalition. I think ultimately it will be what we need to succeed. Unfortunately, I think some additional border wall is going to be constructed under the Trump administration because it is such a signature issue for his administration. But I think we'll be able to stop most of it. So that's something that happened this year that was pretty exciting.
Kevin, so glad to have you joining us on Earth Matters. This is Nathan Newcomer. It's good to have you on today.
Thanks.
Yeah, what other issues will Southwest Environmental Center be working on in 2018? I know that we worked, both of our organizations worked together on the national monument attacks that the Trump administration has been doing. So can you give us a glimpse into the near future of the work that you guys are going to be looking at into 2018?
Yes, I did not mean to. There's so many issues, right? We're going to stay really busy. We were really busy this year. We're going to be even more busy next year. Monuments was a huge issue. Fortunately, the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument here in Doñana County dodged a bullet in terms of acreage reduction. It's going to, as you know, going to get some tweaks in the management plan, or the proclamation, I should say, which will reduce coverage protection somewhat. Another big issue that's coming up, similar, is Otero Mesa. And Nathan, you and I, our groups have been working on this for 15 years at least.
At least, yeah.
And under the Richardson administration, we went to court to stop the BLM from opening up this really special one of the largest remaining desert grasslands in North America, really important for wildlife. We got a court order protecting it, and the BLM had to go back and come up with a new plan. But we are now hearing rumblings that this administration is once again turning its sight to this very special landscape, which some have called the Serengeti of the Southwest. So it's still at risk. It's unprotected, and I think that's going to be a big battle in 2018.
So, Kevin, just briefly on Otero Mesa, the Las Cruces Bureau of Land Management, which is the managing agency for Otero Mesa, they're in the process of doing a draft environmental impact statement for the tri-county of Doniana, Sierra, and Otero County. How does this sort of new rumblings that you're hearing about oil and gas development fit into their current draft resource management plan?
Well,
if at all.
It may have circumvented that plan. This is all very recent breaking news. We understand that the Las Cruces BLM office folks are being reassigned to basically help finish some other plans in the state in order to expedite oil and gas production, namely Carlsbad and Farmington. I don't know what that's going to do. The Tri-County, this is getting in the weeds a bit, but the Tri-County plan is the one that's been in the works for 8 years now, and it had some good alternatives as far as protecting Otero Mesa, but the future of that plan seems to be on hold now. We don't know what's going to happen because, you know, the priority of the Trump administration is to get out the oil and get out the gas on federal lands.
Kevin, what about, maybe you can give us, this is Allison, give us an update on the monuments issue. We've heard a lot about, you know, trying to shrink our Oregon Mountains, Desert Peaks National Monument, our newest monument in New Mexico. But have we escaped that threat? Where are we?
We haven't escaped the threat. I don't think that the Secretary of Interior, Ryan Zinke, is recommending that Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks be shrunk. He is recommending that the livestock grazing be given its sort of elevated importance in the proclamation that established the monument. Whether that has any actual on-the-ground consequences remains to be seen. And still, it's really up to the Trump administration to take action on those recommendations, which the administration has done in terms of shrinking. Most people, I'm sure, have heard of this, shrinking Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments in Utah. Drastic reductions in the size of those. But that does not seem like it's going to happen, at least not yet, for our monuments in New Mexico.
Well, many thanks to Allison Civic, Kevin Bixby, and Donna Stevens for joining me in today's show. As always, thanks to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in to this week's program. You can tune in to Gila Members Community Radio on the Earth Matters webpage for archives of all the programs, including today's. Best wishes to all for a very peaceful and happy 2018. And please join us next week and next year for another edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU, 89.1 FM. This is what your community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a beautiful day, everyone.